Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Please note, season one of this podcast was recorded before the passing of our beautiful and brilliant TV mom, Suzanne Summers. Suzanne, we love you, we miss you, and this podcast is dedicated to you.
We're two stepsisters bonded, living Hollywood life. Even if one of us is watching for the very first time, all the good, the bad, the barky, take a peek inside. Let's rewatch and relive the good times. Keenan and they can give you deja vu.
Hi, this is Keenan and Lake and Give You Deja Vu, the step-by-step rewatch podcast where we break down every episode of Step by Step in order. I'm Christine Lakin and I played Al Lambert.
I'm Stacey Keenan and I played Dana Foster.
And we're going to tell you how it really went down because
we were there.
So today we're going to be recapping the episode First Anniversary. It is from season one, episode four, and the air date was October 11th, 1991. Wow. Okay. I watched this last night. Watched it with my kids. I have to say one child was more interested than the other.
And which one was that? The older one or the younger one?
The older one. The older one was more interested. Oh. But they both, again, they both really loved the intro. They're like, Mama, can we go on that? Can we go on that? I'm like, first of all, Colossus doesn't exist anymore. They tore it down.
Well, it did. It rotted because it was sitting on the beach. It's in the water,
exactly,
if you recall. So, yeah.
They want to ride the roller coaster. And then my daughter goes, once again, how was it? And I'm like, once again, couldn't ride it. Like, salt in the wound, Georgia, salt in the wound. She goes, but you were on it. How'd they do that? I said, well, it was a green screen. And then so then I was like explaining green screens.
Right.
And I was like, I can't discuss this. I have to watch the episode.
And this was my, as in all the episodes, this was my first time watching this. I have never right. saw it then, never watched it since. All of this is news to me.
Yeah. Well, let me get into this one. All right. So first anniversary, there's a couple things going on here. It's Frank and Carol's 1 month anniversary. And she's like, oh, what are we going to do for our 1 month? You know, and Frank is basically like, well, did you want to get gifts? And she's like, oh, no, we don't need gifts. No, not at all. But of course, Carol wants gifts because she's neurotic. And so Frank goes off to buy a power saw. And Carol, meanwhile, is going to find him some extravagant gift, probably down at like Dillard's or Sears or something. I don't know where she goes.
JCPenney. Maybe a Kohl's.
Probably. She goes to find him this jacket, which, by the way, it's a total Frank jacket.
It is the Frankiest of Frank jackets.
She pulls out.
She went to the Frank section of Penny's to find that one.
And she pulls out this jacket that is like, has leather patches. It has green canvas. It looks like it's really warm. I mean, this is a very 90s, you know, like it's a worker man's jacket.
Yeah, or a little bit of a barn jacket. Yeah,
for sure. And in, you know, again, true television form, she like brings it to him and wrapped in the box is wrapped. Only yes. In television do we wrap gifts like this because it has to be quick. So, and I guess no one ever heard of a gift bag. So it's a box where the lid is also wrapped in the same paper. And it's like, there's a bow on it, but the bow is only around the lid. So literally all you do is open the box. Lid.
Right. So this is something no one would ever wrap a gift like this in real life. It's kind of like how in movies, all the phone numbers are 555. It's the 555 of presents.
Yeah.
Because the thing with the gift bag is that it's too noisy.
It's noisy.
You can't have all that rustling and you can't have all this tissue paper rustling around. So it's just this, everyone just kind of agrees. It makes no sense. But it's just a thing.
And it's also a lot of work for a prop master. I want to put that out there.
Yeah.
They're really doing like Christmas episodes for get it. They're wrapping until like midnight every night because, you know, we're using those boxes for during the week and like we're rehearsing with them and then they all get torn up and then they all have to get rewrapped. I mean, total nightmare. I never really thought about it like that.
Props is a nightmare job.
Props is a really hard job.
It truly is. Yeah. And then it's the production meeting for next week. And it's like, well, we're going to need a life-size plaster jaguar.
Right.
For this one that's painted green. And we're going to need four of those because they might get destroyed because we're going to be dumping concrete on them. Or just
24 hours later. Actually, it's going to be an owl now.
But 9 feet tall and we're going with purple.
It's always funny, though. You know, I work with a lot of prop masters over the years, and especially now that I'm a director, because they're constantly asking me questions. And I appreciate that. Like, they want to be real specific about what they're making because it's a lot of time and energy on their part and they don't want to be wrong on the day. And it's always funny when I get to a scene and I'm like, I got to give him an activity. Do we have a soda? Can he go get a soda? And I look at the buddy is our prop master on the Goldbergs. I'm like, buddy, you have
such
a soda?
A perfect name.
And I just see it is. I
see buddy, the prop man. Yeah. He's your buddy.
I see his eyes just glaze over sometimes as in like, I can go to the truck. I'm just like, I didn't tell him about this in the production meeting. And now I have an idea. And now he's pissed. Because you can't use Coke. You have to use special sodas. They're
right.
All wrapped in like a special way. And they have fake names. Anyway, it's a whole thing. Okay.
It's a tough gig.
It's a tough gig.
Anywho.
She, you know, gets him this really nice gift. And then she's like, and what'd you get me? And truth be told, he's like, nothing. We thought we weren't doing gifts. And she's like, but what's that? And he's like, it's a power saw. She's like, oh, come on, Frank. And she goes over there and she opens it and it's a power saw.
That he bought for himself.
That he bought for himself, like he said he was going to do.
Because he's a construction man.
And now she's pissed. So this is where the episode is interesting to me. Because I'm kind of like, does she have a right to be pissed about this? And by the way, who celebrates a 1 month anniversary?
That was the major question. When I first saw the title of Ep, I was like, wait a minute. They've been together for a year already? This is episode 4. Yeah. And then it turns out it's a 1 month anniversary. Yeah. I guess Carol is supposed to be very romantic, very sentimental.
Is it romantic and sentimental or is it like crazy and controlling?
Or is it like seventh grade?
1 month anniversary. The only time I think I've ever celebrated a week or month anniversary was definitely below ninth grade.
Middle school. It's middle school vibes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I can barely remember the 1 year. Sorry, babe. I'm like, the years, I'm like, okay, I can get on board with that. The first date, no idea. No idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's Carol, right?
Yeah.
She's, I don't know
needy.
What the word is, needy, or she's particular, or she's organized,
that's true. These
things.
Very
this was
organized.
Before the time when you would have a calendar in your phone.
Absolutely.
So she's got a book somewhere that she's written the 1 month date?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He goes to great lengths to then try to, you know, rectify this situation because he's like, uh-oh. I just married this woman and she's already mad at me.
She might be crazy.
And she might be crazy. Here's a flower. And she's like, gee, thanks, Frank. And she basically like throws it away.
Throws it, right, because he's trying to make up with her now because of the power saw debacle. And he gives her, if you notice, it was a very noticeably fake rose. And it was just kind of like, what are we pretending that was a real flower?
There was also a couple of things in this episode I noticed with the camera where they were doing a lot of these weird, like, zoom ins.
Like, punch in.
Did you notice that?
Now that you say that, yes.
It looked so strange. I was like, I don't ever remember these
punching
zoom-ins.
Punching in.
And like,
all of a sudden?
Yeah, and like a three camera comedy. It was like, but it was also like not super stable. Like, it all seemed like it was a little bit like jerky as we were punching in and pulling out. I don't know. It was, we were trying things.
Yeah.
We were trying things.
Yeah, yeah, we were experimenting with the format.
Yeah. Anyway, he eventually is like, I got to do something. He enlists his son. He makes a whole, they got married in Jamaica. He makes a whole Jamaica part two in the beauty shop. Don't forget, Carol has a beauty shop. It is attached to the house. And there are multiple people there all the time getting their hairs did.
Constantly. So constantly. I wonder, I mean, Carol is thrilled when he does this big reveal of the Jamaican redo of the salon. And, but it's a redo. The walls are done.
There's tiki torches.
There's, I mean, he kind of did a construction job on it.
So you can't help
but wonder, well, how is this going to function as a salon tomorrow? Because the salon is now a beach hut. He doesn't seem to be worried that this is her workplace and source of income, but okay, we're just not going to worry about that at all.
He's taken JT, you know, JT's dressed up in some kind of like outfit to deliver them drinks.
Yeah, it's an amalgam. He's got a straw hat. He's got a lei.
Right.
He's got some kind of floral, quasi-Hawaiian look going. Yeah, because he's the bartender or the waiter. He's everything. He's the host, the bartender, the waiter.
And of course, like at the end, true in form, you know, he goes out to get the drinks and he goes to come back in. He's like, whoa, lock the door. God. Yeah. And like the last thing we see of Frank and Carol, they've made up and she's, you know, really happy. And it was so romantic. And, you know, he's done all the right things by giving her this huge, elaborate for saying, no, we don't have to exchange gifts to, oh, actually what I wanted was something huge and elaborate. So let's just be honest about our feelings. And then like, she's like on top of him. She basically, they start kissing and then she's like straddling him in the beauty shop, basically.
Pretty much.
Georgia was not having it. She was not having it.
Yeah. It's an episode about communication.
Well, sure.
Right. I mean, it kind of is summed up in this one line where he says to Carol, you know, basically it's confusing, you know, by saying you don't want, you know, oh, I don't need a gift, because then he's supposed to intuit that, of course, he needs to get her a gift.
To be a mind reader.
He finds that confusing, which is fair.
Totally.
Which is fair. So this, I liked this. It was, you know, this is a couple. They're still new. You know, they didn't know each other very much at all before they got married in this whirlwind wedding in Jamaica. So they're getting to know each other. They're learning how to communicate.
I love that the entire premise, just once again, the entire premise of this show is built upon the fact that two people who were horny and barely knew each other went to Jamaica, got swept up in the magic, and got married.
Yeah. And
that's,
you know,
the entire premise of the show.
That's the entire show. And seeing it now, you know, I can see how that had to be going on in the writer's room of, you know, these people have to work on this relationship.
Right.
It is
ripe with conflict. So
yes.
It makes for good comedy.
Yeah. They have a ton of chemistry. They're super hot for each other, but they also, we have to see how in reality, how would this ever work? How are they going to navigate each other?
Yeah.
And I think it had to be a thing. I don't know. No one's ever said this, but I think it had to be a thing where they're like, them being super hot for each other is a core of this show.
Totally.
Which I never realized. I never knew that. I thought it was a super tame family show. It is, but it's a super tame family show where the mom and the dad are hot for each other all the time.
All the time.
Constant.
Yeah. It's just interesting these days. I wonder if you went in to pitch this show and you could be like, okay, it's like the Brady Bunch. And they're like, all right, but how did they get together? And then they got married in secret. Like, I feel like executives would be like, they would have so many issues with the origin story of how these two people got together and the fact they left their children. And, you know, just I feel like there would be so many questions.
I think so, too. It was a simple, it was such a simpler time.
It was. And we didn't need to know any of that. It didn't matter.
It didn't matter. The fact is,
they're together and now we're just moving forward.
The chemistry is there.
Looking backwards.
And they didn't need to sit down with a therapist with all 17 kids and do a deep dive into, can we make this family work? The parents just decided we are marrying each other and you people are going to figure it out.
Right. And we're going forward. I mean, I do feel like, okay, so we're bearing the lead a little bit with this episode because it's called First Anniversary, but really, I feel like the B story is, I mean, very fresh in my mind. The B story is all about cousin Cody.
I could not believe this. I was like, wait a minute. Cody shows up in season one, episode four. I thought that fool didn't show up until, I don't know, season five. This is, I'm serious. Look, I know that it's like I wasn't there and I've been kind of reanimated in this body and I'm learning about, I get that, but really, when he showed, so he's mentioned in the cold open.
The cold open, the very first like scene of this episode is cousin Cody's coming to town.
Yeah, and JT's all pumped because Cody is so cool and he lives in his van.
Lives in his van and he's like coolest guy ever.
And I was floored.
And there's no real, he's coming to visit, but there's like no, like, is he on his way somewhere? What does he do for a living? Like none of that is explained. I think, I mean, it's really strange. It's like they brought this character in. I feel like they did it kind of as a test, a sort of like a guest starry thing. I don't know. I need to know the inside of this. He's the Fonzie, you guys.
Yes.
If you don't know,
he's the breakout character.
He's the Urkel. He's the Fonzie. He's the one in all of these shows that Miller Boyette produced. There's always one. There's always one character that's like off kilter, but has a really good heart. It was like Falky. It's like Fonzie was super cool. But he had like a really good like moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
Urkel, not cool, but klutzy. Also klutzy, all of that.
But heart of gold.
But heart of gold. Like it's the same. Balky came from a different place. Like
naive.
He's almost like from a different planet.
Off base.
Right.
But a very
Mork.
Good guy. Yes.
I mean,
yes.
There is a through line to this.
Yeah. Now look, the breakout character don't always break out. Sometimes you bring somebody on to be the breakout character and the audience is just like, meh, doesn't happen.
Right.
I thought that Cody showed up way later in the show.
I did too.
When the show was in the kind of a slump and needed, you know, a breath of fresh air and needed the breakout character to ride in. I mean, here we still barely know who the main characters are, the members of the family. I could not believe it, but that was my recollection that he showed up when it was like, okay, time to introduce some fresh blood here. I was stunned.
I was too. I was really surprised. I would like to know more about that process and whether they cast this role. This is something I'm going to have to ask Ronnie. Whether they cast
that's Ronnie Hallen, one of the producers,
yeah,
and who also edited the show.
Right. And I'm just curious if they were like, no, we have this guy. Because a lot of times they would incubate people on other shows,
right,
and then they would bring them in. Like they knew you from going places and brought you in kind of. They were like, oh, we really like her. And so I don't know. I'm super curious. Anyway, Cody comes in. He is like dude-ski, kind of a force to be reckoned with, a tone unlike anyone else in the show. He's like almost a California surfer guy.
Kind of a Keanu. Kind of Bill and Ted's Keanu.
Tall, you know, really cute, has like a very like goofy personality.
A whole swagger, a whole walk.
Totally. You're so cool, JT keeps saying. He's like, I know, you know.
Yeah, he's a funny mix because he says things that sound really cocky,
right,
such as, you know, I know, and that, you know, JT is talking about how all the ladies love Cody and Cody's like, yup. But somehow it doesn't come off jerky.
Yeah.
He's not being arrogant. He's just kind of stating the facts.
Yeah. He's sort of like the smartest dumb guy in the room. I feel like maybe that's how they...
Yeah, super confident, but very laid back, not cocky, very, I don't know, just up for anything and fun. Why does he live in a van? Why is he a nomad? Does he not have a home? We don't know.
We don't know. We've never known. And from that point on, we never knew. And he was just kind of always in the backyard. It was never stated like he's not leaving. He never kind of said like, oh, I need to, you know,
crash here for a bit, you know.
And then he just always was there. So he comes in, you know, JT is already like so enamored with him and basically wants, he dares him that he bets him $20 that there's one girl that he'll never be able to go out with. And of course, Karen comes down the stairs and, you know, he's like kind of flirting with her. And he's like, no, not her. And then, of course, Dana walks in and she's in a pissy mood from school or God knows
what. As usual.
And then he's like, no, her. And he's like, ah, come on, I can do this. And so begins this bet of him trying to, you know, woo Dana. And this becomes, I feel like, the greatest will they or won't they definitely won't love story of Step by Step. It was like, he loves her, she can't give him the time of day. And this is like what happens for the next 7 years, basically.
Okay. You're gonna think that I'm crazy. I did not know any of that. I didn't know this. I was watching it being like, wait, what? Are you kidding? Hold on. So there's supposed to be some kind of romantic storyline here? I know. I understand it was a bet. It wasn't a, none of that sound, I just was surprised.
You were like watching your, you're like, oh, here's my life. And I had no idea that this was actually what everybody else was thinking.
It's kind of like I was in a coma and I'm sort of watching because I remember it as Dana and Cody just don't get along. That was my version of that, that, you know, dynamic is that Dana is constantly annoyed by Cody. Cody is so cool and chill that he's like, hey, Dana, you know, he still is cool with her and kind of wants to be chill, be friends. And Dana's always, you know, ripping his head off. But the whole thing, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I can't believe Cody's here already. And I can't believe from day one, we're starting off with Dana and Cody in a, are they going to go out or
is
something?
Is this a thing? Yeah.
So apparently I don't know what this show is about at all. I don't know if I was actually there. I seem to have missed the premise that, as you say, then went on for about 7 years.
Yeah.
Is that what's happening?
I mean, I think that's what they were trying to set up in the beginning anyway. And I think it morphed because obviously later in the seasons, like Rich Halke came to town and then that became the real will they or won't they? And then they did.
So that became Dana's
boyfriend. That was the Ross Rachel. I mean, I think they always were going to have some kind. You need that because by the end, you need the payoff for the audience to know that these two people get together. And that's what's really so exciting about a relationship like that. And for oil and water, the chase. And for oil and water to finally find common ground, I think is like really satisfying.
And that there can be a lot of chemistry in that, you know, for sure. And there is no clearer foil for those two characters
for sure.
than each other.
Yeah.
You know, Karen, that's not going to work.
No.
You know, it's just, there's no push there.
But what was interesting, so they go through this whole thing. Dana eventually finds out via Karen that the whole thing is based in a bet. And so she's like, oh, well, of course I'll go out with him because I'll do anything to, you know, stick it to JT. So she does go out with him. They go to some concert. They have, you know, a fine time. And then she's just like, you have to pay him the money. Ha, ha, ha. Thinking she won. And then, of course, Cody in a like true form is like, no, man, I can't take your money. I'm in love. And like, that's where that's where the mind, I think, really is like blown.
I guess
that was the mode he played for a very long time thereafter.
I can't believe that. I don't remember this as the storyline at all. I really don't. Now with that, shall we take a little break?
Yeah, let's take a break. Let everyone digest that.
All right. We'll be back. Deja vu.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Okay, we're back. So that's the episode, basically in a nutshell. I feel like with the Cody character was such a... I think for many people who watch the show, a lot of people really resonated with him, and a lot of people really remembered him. He was the person I got the most questions about growing
yes,
up.
Absolutely.
Is he really like that? What is Cody like? Do you guys hang out? Like, I'm like, he's like 28 and I'm like 14. We're not really like hanging out.
I was like, we get along.
Like, I don't know what you want me to, like, I don't know. But kids were obsessed with him. Girls were obsessed with him. I think women were a little obsessed with him.
He definitely was hitting
a lot of quadrants there.
Yes. The main thing that people wanted to talk about for sure, just running into people on the street or whatever. And that was the number one question. Is he really like that? And I don't know about you, but my answer was yes.
Yes.
Yes. People did not seem to believe that or accept that. But when I said he is exactly like that, and he is playing that. That's him.
Mm-hmm.
Cody is Sasha.
Correct.
Essentially, not in every way, but in a lot of ways. They seemed to think that that was like some kind of political answer or something.
Yeah, no.
Or meant to be sort of a right answer, but couldn't possibly be true. That is true.
It is true. I think a lot of the things that came from that character eventually came from him.
Yes.
You know, the handshakes, the...
The wingspan.
The huge hands out.
Yeah. So Sasha is very tall.
Yeah.
You know, some people say to me all the time, which is just lovely, oh my God, you're so short in person. Yes. Thank you very much. That's correct. I am 5'3". But I guess on TV, people kind of they put you in their own sort of perspective and they decide that you're a certain size or whatever. But Sasha doesn't just look tall. He is very tall. I think he's like 6'5", 6'4", something. He's very tall.
Yeah.
So he would throw out his arms to either side, and he's like a California condor. His wingspan across is like 7 feet.
Yeah.
By the time he throws his arms out, and these poor camera guys are like, whoa, 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 whoa. Because you don't want to cut off someone's arms in a shot that would look so bizarre.
Right.
But when they suddenly unfurl this massive expanse, and you're trying to pull focus and make sure to get all 9 feet of arm and hand into the frame.
Zoom back quick.
Yeah. These guys had to learn that wingspan fast, because he would just throw that out there and all of a sudden we're scrambling out there.
And I mean, this is where, like, you know, the guitar came in. There were all these like hilarious and silly songs he would come up with, because, you know, Cody fancied himself as like a musician, which he wasn't.
Wasn't there a motorcycle component, which was a Sasha thing? He rode motorcycles. Like, he was a mechanic, I think.
Yep.
Like, he worked on bikes. So that sort of came into the character. But, you know, the writers did that on this show a lot.
Yeah.
They used the source. They used the real, they knew us eventually.
They would find out the
really
things that
well.
Were interesting to you, or that you were good at, or like, you know, and they would sort of inject that into, I think, a lot of the storylines, which was really fun. I mean, it was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, I love he comes in and you're like, Dana says, you know, he lives in a van? Has he had all his shots? I mean, it just started so many hilarious snide comments. Did you feel like, I mean, you had so much to do with him over the years. Like, you had a lot of storyline with him. And there was a lot of, I feel like, physical comedy that would go on, especially on his part. What was that? I mean, had you ever worked with somebody like that?
No, definitely not. And, you know, on My Two Dads, I was the daughter, I was the kid. And, you know, it was just different being, Dana's still a teenager, but it was more of an adult thing. Like,
yeah.
And especially now kind of realizing, I guess, for the first time that there was this kind of, I don't know, romantic undercurrent or, you know, as you say, well, they won't they undercurrent.
It's probably better that you didn't pick up on that, that maybe that's what they were telegraphing. Because your character would never, I mean, I think it was always for your character going to be a won't they. They won't. I think for you, it was going to be a won't they.
Yeah, which is, I guess, I mean, he's so cute. So what's Dana's problem is that he's just too goofy. He's too confident that he dares to hit on her. I'm not sure what Dana's problem is exactly. But, well, okay, yes, I do. Okay, so in that first scene where he meets Dana, Cody is, he's like, oh, are you a model? And we see him ask Karen that, and Karen's like, oh, no, I just look like one. You know, she just kind of enjoys it. But Dana is, like, offended.
Yes,
you know, because it's obviously such a line. So, okay. But, you know, I had never had that kind of, I don't know what, whatever you call that. Like, oh, there's some kind
situationship.
Of situationship. Yeah, there's some tension that's supposed to be here. Or no, that was definitely a first time. But I was kind of intimidated by him. He was so tall. He was so big.
He was a big personality too.
Yeah.
You know? He'd walk on set and he would talk to everyone and like, dudeski, hey man, hey bro. Like he was, and like, I remember, you know, he was like a big kid. And I think that's why, like, I remember, you know, loving being in scenes with him. I loved his attention. I thought he was really cool and really kind. And when he would sort of, you know, play with us, like the kids, I in that stage of the show, it was really very much, it was a little bit segregated, I felt. I felt like I was always hanging out with Chris Castile and, you know, Josh Byrne. We were like the little kids. And then there were sort of like you and Angela. And then sometimes, you know, Brandon would float back and forth. But once Sasha came onto the show, Brandon was very much like, I want to be buddies with Sasha.
Yeah.
Like he wanted to be, because Sasha was cool. I get it. And he was older. And so, you know, when Sasha would kind of like have scenes with us, or he would be like, oh, hey, man, like, come sit by me, or like, what, you know. It was always like very exciting. That's how I felt as a kid, as a 12-year-old.
Yeah, he made me nervous. I was definitely a little nervous around him. I was definitely kind of on edge. I don't know why, but I was a little intimidated. I don't know.
I guess surprising.
I just didn't want to say the wrong thing, or not that he was, I mean, he was super nice. I don't know what it was. I just was definitely nervous around him.
Yeah. I know. It's such an interesting, like, you bring somebody on a show like that, and I would be so curious from, like, the writer's perspectives of how they watch it all happen and how they analyze it and how they talk about it. And they're like, oh, I think that went well. Yeah, it seemed like everybody, you know, we really like these storylines. And, you know, just, like, watching bringing someone on. And then when it doesn't work, having to be like,
what do we do?
Write them out of this.
What
how do we get
do?
Them out of this?
Well, how about they just disappear and we never say a word about it?
Well,
how's that for a strategy?
Exactly.
I just can't believe that Cody shows up so early. Because I remember it as this group of people had so much chemistry as a working unit, as a kind of a TV family, right from the very beginning. You know, Suzanne and Patrick got along great. They had, I think, the perfect amount of chemistry. You know, they were both happily married, but there was enough of that, you know, little spark or whatever that they just loved working together, and they could absolutely sell the amount of chemistry that Frank and Carol have. And then all the kids got along, and then Patrick and Suzanne, they liked us. You know, there weren't any bad kids that Patrick and Suzanne had to be like, oh God, you know, this brat that we're stuck with. Everybody, you know, it just, the chemistry was just so there in this kind of rare, magical way.
It was.
That I really can't believe that this huge personality of this other character showed up so early. I remember it being a solid unit. And then at some point, Cody shows up.
I'm going to get to the bottom of this, you guys. I'm going to call Ronnie Hallen. I'm going to get to the bottom of this. I think it's really interesting too. You think about great TV shows like Friends, ensemble TV shows, Frasier. Generally, I feel like there's a rule of six. Like there's usually six cast members. and people, you know, come in and out. But if you think about like those shows, writing for six people and six distinct personalities is difficult enough.
It's a lot. Had, when you have 22 minutes or less yes. of airtime, how are you using all these people? What exactly. the hell are they all doing?
So there were six minutes. Children, two parents, so that's eight, plus Cody, plus grandma and
Penny.
And Penny.
Aunt Penny.
That's insane. That's too many people.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of people.
It's a lot. And, you know, I didn't realize, I just, the way the episode came together, it was all, every little piece connected eventually, and every little piece kind of paid off in its own way.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, that's hard to do. I mean, in some of these, yeah, there's a C story.
Right, right. I know. I didn't even touch on that because what was that? I don't know. They were just trying to give us lines. They were literally like, what do we do with the trifecta of the young children on this show? Let's make them, they're in some kind of baseball. They're doing baseball trivia.
Baseball trivia.
I mean, because Chris Castile, once again, he was very into baseball. He was? Oh, yeah. So he played kind of a nerd on the show.
Well, yeah.
But he was very into golf. He was very into baseball.
Yeah. Big golfer. I remember that every Christmas. It was tight-laced this and golf balls and always trying to find him going to some random golf store That's in right. North Hollywood, wandering around being like, what do we get somebody who likes golf?
That's what you're like, great. I got Chris as a secret Santa. Here yeah. I go.
Yeah.
I'm off to Big Five.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was, cause you know, I shared a schoolroom with him.
Yeah.
So he was like so into baseball stats. He would listen in the back. His mother drove him from Orange County every day. And it was such a long drive. He would drive to the studio and back.
So for people outside of the LA area, Orange County is where Disneyland is. So it's the county over, one of the counties over from LA. And, you know, traffic wise, it's a hike. I mean, it's decent distance too.
It's an hour on a good day.
Yes.
And I think it's an hour and a half normally. And I think sometimes it's two.
Yes.
And for a small child to be going back and forth commuting like that to a job, like I can't even imagine. That would be atrocious.
Yeah, you're right.
And for that person's mom. Ugh. And he had a sister and like, I mean, he had a whole family, you know? So it's, yeah, it was a lot. But anyway, so he would listen in the back seat. I would always laugh at him that he rode in the back seat like his mom was a chauffeur. But I think it's because it was just safer. But like, you know, this was the 90s. And I was like, why aren't you sitting in the front seat? What's wrong with you?
Yeah. These days he would have a booster seat until he was like 17.
Seriously. I probably should still be in a booster. Let's be honest. So he would listen to all the baseball games. And it was like, God, it was constant. And I was like, ugh, turn off the AM radio. Like, I can't handle it.
It was AM radio?
I was listening to AM radio.
It was like an 80-year-old man.
Believe me, I know.
Oh, my God.
So that was like a big part of his, yeah. And so I think the writers like wrote that kind of stuff in. Meanwhile, Al is really getting into hats. Hats are starting to become a trademark for Al.
Watching this episode.
Felt hats.
I was picturing that Al has a hat closet where it's double doors and she pulls the two doors open and there's nothing in there except a plain solid colored baseball hat in every single color of the rainbow.
Yeah.
And there's like 40 of them.
Yeah.
And they're all different colors. And she just goes, which solid plain baseball hat shall I wear today?
And
I'll go with the bright yellow. Next day, the bright purple.
Totally. And I feel like also there would be a lot of ill-fitting overall shorts. Just large overall shorts. Let's talk about a couple of the looks in this episode because there's some good ones. The very first one is Carol wearing a monochromatic tan outfit.
Mini dress with hose.
Hose and a tan pump.
Heel. Now, you may not think that's
making dinner
particularly remarkable, but she is rolling something with a rolling pin. So is she, you know, tossing a salad or stirring a pot? No, she's got a rolling pin as though she's, I don't know, making phyllo from scratch, perhaps.
She said we're having tacos. So she must have been making fajitas.
So she's doing tortillas from scratch?
Tortillas from scratch.
So she grew up in Guadalajara. We just didn't know that.
That's correct.
So she has the technology to make a homemade tortilla.
That's correct.
And she's cooking in the kitchen wearing hose and heels. That blew my mind. I thought, who is it? What? Is this a TV thing? Or is this a 1990s thing? Did women in the 90s walk around their houses not only wearing a bra, which is a tall order? Like, if you're walking around the house with a bra on, you're some kind of executive. You're on some kind of diamond level. I don't know what's going on.
I'm not wearing a bra right now, and I'm not even in my own house.
So, right. So then if you, and I'm only wearing one because Lakin's here, you know, out of respect.
Oh, that was nice.
You know, but she's not only wearing a bra and a mini dress, but hose and heels.
I think that's just a Suzanne thing.
Yes.
Frankly. Because okay. she okay. has, listen, she has a great figure.
Woo!
She knows it.
Mm.
And she has great legs.
Oh,
but
so
I
good.
Think when you are going to showcase your gams on television, you want them to look the best they are. And let's be clear, your legs are going to look different wearing like a flip-flop than they are wearing a pump.
Okay, let me just ask you this. Would Dolly Parton be wearing a flip-flop?
Hell no.
I don't think so. Is Suzanne Somers going to wear a flip-flop?
Hell no.
Absolutely not. And you know, I learned the technology of the nude heel from Suzanne Somers because I will have you know, despite the fact that my mom was a woman of style, I still was one that was doing a dye-to-match shoe.
Okay.
Oh, yes. That's right. So if it was a, you know, peach dress that I wore to a dance, we were finding a peach shoe or we were dyeing a shoe.
Dyeing a shoe.
To match the peach dress.
Liza.
Yes. Until Suzanne Somers arrived on the scene and said, you know, a nude heel goes with everything and it's going to elongate your leg.
Yeah.
There's no need to dye a shoe.
No one needs a peach pump. No one needs a peach foot.
Or blue or whatever foot cocktail right. of color we were talking about. You don't need it. Wear a nude heel. It's great. So, you know, just.
I feel like that's also a little bit of a Vegas thing. Could I be wrong about that?
It's, I mean, look, this is also, you know, in a way, it's kind of a more elegant version of stripper technology, right?
Sure.
If you're doing a plastic see-through heel, it's going to elongate your leg.
It's going to look good.
Because you're not cutting off your ankle with a black strap.
Absolutely.
Which is another thing that Suzanne just did not do. Anyway, I learned that from her. Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank
that
you.
Is something I take with me to this day.
I feel like
I have a solid nude heel that I always have on hand.
I might go home tonight and put on a solid nude heel and make some tortillas in my kitchen.
From scratch with a rolling pin.
Let me tell you what. I guarantee you I'll get lucky.
Yes.
I guarantee I'm pretty it.
Yes, I think that's right.
Can you imagine if I was dancing in a miniskirt and a nude heel making tortillas?
With a rolling pin.
With a rolling pin? My husband would come home and be like, oh my God. Yeah. Is it our anniversary?
It's like
is
a
our 1 month anniversary? Did like I forget it?
It's like a porn.
Lock the children in the other bedroom.
It's kind of like a porn.
It is.
It
yeah,
is.
It's great.
It is. Yes. And it was the monochromatic tan, which I do have a question. Why are we doing monochromatic tan and brown and olive and like different shades of tan and beige and brown. I mean, I don't know how many times.
I blame the Kardashians.
I blame the Kardashians. I was going to say the same thing. I want to say this is a Skims thing. I don't know how many times I've been driving down the street and done kind of a double take and being like, is there a naked lady walking into that gym? And it's like, no, she's just wearing tan leggings and a tan one-shouldered bandeau top. And she looks like she's nude.
Right.
And I don't get it.
And a tan shoe. And a tan chunky shoe.
There are lots of colors that are pretty colors. And tan is not one of them. And I don't see that tan is super flattering on a lot of people.
Unless you have like really dark olive or black skin. Then
that would be.
That makes sense.
Beautiful. But wouldn't on that skin, wouldn't a beautiful jewel tone or a pretty color be even prettier?
I'm with you.
I'm asking. I don't know.
We're asking. If you have the answer to this question. Find us.
Yes.
DM us. Let us know your thoughts.
Please.
On a monochromatic
please
moment.
To advise and please attach a photo. If you are a strong partisan and proponent of this look, Can we see it?
We want it.
I
want
to know, like, what skin tone do you have? How are you working this? How, just, please crack the code for us. Now, with that, shall we take a little break?
We'll take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about a couple more things and before we wrap up. Deja vu. Okay, we are back. I have two other outfits I just want to, like, put out there in the ether. If Suzanne is too tan, then Stacy in this episode is too black. There is a black pump, black hose, black skirt combo that's happening.
Wait, was it a pump or a flat? I thought there was a lot of very lackadaisical flats.
It was hard to say because you were in a lot of scenes with Cody, and I feel like they can only get you from, like, the shin up.
Yes, right. Because he is literally more than a foot taller than me if I am wearing a flat.
I mean, I didn't mind that outfit. I felt like you definitely were giving me, like, strong executive vibes. You're wearing that to a high school?
I mean, for me, I was completely bamboozled, flustered, blown away by Karen in essentially a, like, video vixen outfit. Right. She came down the stairs. I almost fell off of my couch. She is wearing basically a black wrestling singlet, booty short, one piece, sleeveless that was serving. Yes.
She's about to go on the grind. MTV's the grind. And she's going to, like, be spring break,
yes,
Daytona, giving us, like, front row.
Oh, yes.
Where's Eric Nice?
Video
Eric
Nice? And I think she was wearing it with, like, something kind of fly, like a high top sneaker.
Definitely a high top
sneaker. Or something like that. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is giving me whiplash. Just one or two short episodes ago, Karen was wearing a trapeze sleeveless kind of smock top with a short underneath it.
Right.
And all of a sudden now she's in an LL Cool J video.
Yes. The fashion on this show really ran a 90s gamut. And I feel like some of it people are going to watch and be like, oh yeah, like style inspo. Cause everything in the 90s is back. I mean, your date with Cody, when you come back in that large jean blazer.
This is a blazer that apparently, I don't know, maybe Sinbad was filming his talk show next door. And wardrobe was like, hey, Sinbad, I know you're 6'9" and everything. And I don't know, a very nice and solid 250 pounds. But can we borrow this denim blazer to put on an actress who is 5'3"?
We desperately
on a
need
tall
something.
Day. Yeah.
You know, for scene S.
It was long. It was big.
It was long. But I feel like that's something people would wear today. They would. Kim Kardashian is going to look at this episode and be like, oh my God, I need that. Where is it in the archives of Warner Brothers? People would wear that. And I'm not saying it's a good look. I'm just saying it's in fashion.
It's a thing. And I don't get it. I don't really get it because it's so super unflattering.
It was
the
not
wrestling
very flattering.
Singlet on Karen is hot. Is hot now, was hot then, you know, what could go wrong? But the massive jacket, like, why are we doing this again?
I also feel like, if I remember correctly, at this time, I mean, I'm really trying to go back. We were still filming at Culver Studios. We had not moved to Warner Brothers yet. I think we were still at the Culver Studios.
And Culver Studios, for the folks out there, is a very distinctive studio because it's very tiny. It's a cute little pocket studio, unlike, you know, Universal or Warner Brothers, that are these massive lots that just go on. You'll never get to the end of them.
Yeah.
You could work on there for years and you'd be hard pressed to see the entire lot.
Yeah.
Culver Studios is cute. It's quaint. It's small. It's manageable. And the front face of the lot is a plantation house that I believe was used for parts of Gone with the Wind.
I think so.
And it's still there. And now it has offices in it. So it's this huge white plantation house
that's
they keep it very manicured and there's rose bushes and that kind of thing. Anyway, so just to set the stage a little bit for Culver Studios.
We were still filming there. And I feel like you at this time in your personal life were kind of in like a quasi, is this right? Were you into like a grunge mode yet or not quite? This is 1991. So maybe we hadn't really gotten there yet. You were definitely a lot more like on your day to day. Like, I feel like there was a Betsy Johnson happening. You were a lot more dressed down than Dana ever was. I mean, Dana was a very buttoned up character.
Yeah, I would say kind of, yeah, I would say that's probably right. Kind of just jeans and I don't know, those Doc Martens, not the boots, but the low top ones and like a big plaid shirt from some, you know, vintage store. And I hadn't gotten into raves and that kind of stuff yet.
Right.
So it was, we weren't into the bodysuits and all that kind of vibe yet. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like when you would go in for your fittings and they would be like, okay, we're going to put you in like a mini executive suit. You were like, great. This is my, this is my character. This is what she would wear. This is normal for high school.
I don't remember having any particular reaction to that in terms of the vibe, you know, why am I dressed like a VP? I don't remember having any particular issue or questions with it.
Yeah, it was, I will say like going into your fittings, we'd have fittings every week, but before we would start the seasons and especially into the second season, they would do massive fittings. So they would fit you for like a whole new rack of clothes that they could just pull from any time. And then there might be specific things throughout the episodes. Oh, you need a dress here. Or we're going to refit you for something else here, or whatever. But they would come in and do that. And I remember going, I think it was the second year with our costumer to, I think we went to, they have a really amazing wardrobe place, like the wardrobe unit at Warner Brothers. Like we had our own wardrobe room, but at Warner Brothers, they have a massive wardrobe. Did you ever go there? And you would stand, they had major mirrors. It was where they would fit like movies and stuff.
I think I did go there.
I only
there.
Went once and we had a fitting there.
Yeah.
And it was incredible.
It's absolutely incredible. And we were at different studio lots over time. At first it was Culver Studios. Eventually we moved over to Warner Brothers, which is one of those huge lots and has all of that.
The archives.
History and all of that stuff there. But the coolest thing was, you know, clothes didn't fit us.
Yeah.
Clothes did not fit us.
And clothes everything, don't fit anyone perfectly.
No, exactly. And the seamstresses, by the way, shout out to these ladies. These are people who don't find people like this every day. And there was one lady, her name was Olga.
Olga.
She was from the Ukraine, I believe.
She was unbelievable.
She could do anything. She could put a dart in a sweater.
She was unreal.
In a sweater. She could do, there was nothing that she looked at and said, that's not really possible. She could just do it. Anyway, so everything was getting tailored. They didn't have enough time with us. So they were using dress forms. So they would tailor stuff on the dress form when they couldn't get us in there for these fittings. And the coolest thing that I eventually found out is that the dress form that they were using for me that was part of the Warner Brothers archive was Natalie Woods.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes, yes, yes. And I wanted to buy it and they wouldn't let me buy it.
Wow, that's really cool.
I don't know if it was Olga who told me that, but yeah. That's I don't know. I mean, awesome. What the hell would I have done with it?
I don't know.
Can you imagine? And that would totally happen. Like you would walk into the office in my house where we're recording this right now, and there would just be a dress form.
Yes, of course.
Standing there. I don't sew.
I don't do, and
I'm not that size anymore either, just for the record. But anyway, yeah.
It did kind of ruin me for the rest of my life though, because, you know, being 5'1 and having like a specific, like I have no torso. So every time I buy something off the rack, I'm like, well, I'm going to have to tailor it. And like it did, it ruined me. I would go to the cleaners and be like, okay, so I'm gonna need you to put a dart here. I'm gonna need you to do that. And he would just look at me like, ma'am.
Dart? What is a dart?
You're at Milton Edie's. Like, we are not miracle workers. I don't know what. And I was like, no, it's totally possible. And they were like, no, it's totally not. And even when you would finally get them to like do something, they'd be like, great, that's going to be $250. And I'd be like,
oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah, because you're
could
on.
How could it possibly be that expensive?
Yes, you're on studio money where nothing matters.
Dress.
But they're like, oh, you know, we kind of like this dress, but it's the wrong size. So that's fine. We're just going to take the zipper out, completely resize it, and then reassemble the dress, put the zipper back in.
It ruined me. Ruined me for clothes. It ruined me. I remember I had a dance in, I think, 10th or 11th grade. And of course, I went to like Judy's and found some dress that, you know, was probably like $40. So I remember taking it in and being like, do you think that they could help me with this? And wardrobe was so nice. They brought Olga in. She like literally remade the dress.
Yes.
She remade the dress for me.
Yes.
And they just did it for me.
Yeah.
For my like 10th grade. I mean.
Yes, they did that for me too. They would do things that you just don't see that are techniques that are just, I think, little known. So I brought.
Clearly not charging me for it.
No, they didn't charge me either. Sorry, Warner Brothers. We got some free stuff from you.
Oh my God. I mean, it really, yeah, it was really unbelievable. They were artisans. I mean, yes. These people were artisans.
They could, oh, another thing Olga could do was alter spandex.
What?
Yes. Yes. You go to a normal tailor and you bring them something such as a Betsy Johnson stretchy spandex, whatever. And they'll be like, oh no, they'll have a look of horror of just like, oh no, oh no. And there's just like a 1,000-yard stare as they're imagining trying to like wrestle this thing through a sewing machine. No problemo for Olga. No problem. But you want to alter that bathing suit? Sure. We'll do that.
I mean, this is the thing that I think people also don't realize. You're watching a TV show. You're growing up with it. You're just like looking at it. You're watching it. You're just watching it for what it is. And it's the thing that I love so much now about also being a director. I love because I understand it, because I saw it, because I lived it. I love the camaraderie of people who do their job so well and who are so, they're so good at it. And they take so much pride in it. And I love recognizing it. I love watching it and seeing it and recognizing it. So whether it's a prop master or whether it's costuming or whether it's lighting or whether it's a grip or whether it's the people that are putting the lamps and the, you know, the set dressing or turning the lamps on and wiring everything. I mean, it really is like, it's incredible. You're making something out of nothing. And when we watch TV, we just take it for granted. We're just literally consuming it, not thinking about any of it.
And it just flies by. But then when you see even a professional makeup artist where their kit is immaculate, every single piece, you know, if you think of your own makeup bag, or I don't know about everybody else, but my own makeup bag where there's, you know, bits of eyeliner have gotten on stuff and there's some powder thing maybe broke at some point. No, no, no. These people, everything is spotless.
Yeah.
Every brush has been cleaned. Everything is flawless.
It's like a doctor's office.
Yes. Yes.
So, and it has to be. That's, you know, part of the hygienic quality of, you know, of a makeup artist. But yeah, it's just an incredible thing to witness and also be a part of.
Yeah, it's true. The professionalism and the skill of all the people involved. Yeah, it just kind of flies by, but it's all there. Yeah. And it's just this incredible universe.
Rose and thorn of episode. I'm going to say, you know, I feel like my rose in this episode was Cody. I have to say, I really had some, like, when he came in, I had some visceral memories of watching him also as a kid. Because it was one thing to work with him. You know, sometimes you were there, you were in or out, you weren't in scenes
with
him.
Well, because you watched the show.
Because I watched the show.
And I did not.
As a 12-year-old, watching him, I was a fan. I got it. I liked him. I liked that character. I wanted to be friends with that character. I thought he was cool. I thought he was nice. I thought he was funny. And I thought he was cute. And so, yeah, like that brought back the 12-year-old in me, you know? And it was funny too, because I looked at Georgia after the episode and I kind of said, like, what do you think? And she like, oh no, it was right around when Karen was like, well, he is kind of cute. You remember she's painting the nails and she tells you about the bet.
Yeah.
And I looked over at Georgia, I go, what do you think? She kind of just like nodded like, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, she concurred. So it was funny. It was funny to watch. I know.
Broad appeal.
Yeah. And then I don't know, the thorn of the episode. I guess I would just say that the whole, I mean, I understand the device of it, but the whole, like, I'm not going to tell you how I really feel, but then I expect you to just understand how I feel. It like drives me crazy. Yeah. It drives me crazy. But
well,
I understand.
You're also married to a therapist.
Right. So I'm like, say how you feel. Stop second guessing it.
But you know, they healed that, or they reached, totally. You know, they kind of reached how that was not the way to proceed for them.
For sure.
Well, next week I will be recapping season 1, episode 5, entitled Frank and Son, the original air date of which was October 18th, 1991. So thank you for listening and joining us this time. I'm Stacey Keenan.
I'm Christine Lakin.
We hope we have given you deja vu. Until next time.
Ciao.
Thank
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. Please write to us at keenanandlakin@gmail.com and follow us on social at Keenan and Lakin. We are so proud that our show is produced by the fabulous Stephen Ray Morris.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.